Good morning. This is Kim Harris and you're listening to Stories of Change. What an interesting story of change we've had this morning. Came in here to the station and everything was turned off. So that was not a change I was expecting, but it's great to be back on the air. Good to have you back. I'm sorry for the delay this morning, but we have got a fantastic episode of Resilient Living coming up today. I'm going to be talking to you about the dynamic world of adaptability and flexibility. So adaptability and flexibility are two skills that are really, really helpful in regards to building personal resilience. So I want you to picture this. You wake up in the morning, you come off to a radio station, we're going to do a show, and you're ready to embrace the normal routine. You've got it all planned out. And when you get here, the computers are all off. It's an unpredictable force, and this is life. Sometimes your car won't start. Your surprise project lands on your plate, or a sudden change of weather transforms your outdoor plans into perhaps indoor plans, especially if we've got some rain today. So in these moments, the power of adaptability shines through, and it's the grace that we have to sort of embrace these unexpected twists and turns and flourish regardless. And the world, let's face it, is in a constant state of flux. We've got lots of new technologies emerging. We've got circumstances evolving in our own lives, in our personal lives, in the world. And challenges just seem to appear suddenly sometimes out of the blue. So how do we navigate that? How do we navigate this ever-changing landscape? And how do we ensure that we not only survive but thrive in the face of change? And of course, that's what Stories of Change is all about. And the answer lies in the twin virtues of adaptability and flexibility, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Essential life skills that really help us to harness the winds of change and emerge stronger and wiser, hopefully, on the other side. So with that in mind, we're going to delve into this topic today, and I've got a fantastic interview lined up. So we'll play a few songs now leading up into 11 o'clock, and then we'll get stuck into that in the new hour. So stay with us and enjoy this one. This one's Five for Fighting 100 Years. I really like this song because it is a bit of a storytelling song. It tells a story of what possibly can happen to a person over the course of 100 years. So enjoy this one. So as I mentioned just before we came up to the news and the hour, we are going to be honoured by someone whose personal journey really does exemplify the power of adaptability and resilience. It's Zach Jones. He's an author, he's a speaker, he's a musician. He co-authored a book actually with his mother, which we're going to talk about a bit later. And he joins us today to share his inspiring story. So I'm really looking forward to getting into this. So Zach Jones, thanks for joining us today.
Kim, thanks so much for having me. Such an honour to be here.
Yeah, great. Your journey is a really, as I said, a testament to the remarkable strength that comes from embracing change, particularly change that you could never have foreseen this. So could you start by telling our listeners just a little bit about your background and some of the unexpected changes that you've had to face?
Yeah, so I was the poster child for a delinquent teenager. So I've been expelled from 8 schools. I made a mess of my teenage years. I made all the wrong choices, hung out with all the wrong people, became addicted to drugs and alcohol very early on throughout my teenage years, and then battled through that. I kind of just created a lifestyle, of poor decisions and really bad behaviours, which all culminated in 2017, me crashing my car drink driving mm-hmm. with 4 friends on board and very nearly killing 5 people that night. By some miracle, everyone survived. And I hate to, reference miracles and, use the word luck, but there was no reason that everyone survived that crash. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to the crash, I really, really went off the rails. Mm. It was drugs and alcohol that led me to that crash. Mm. And then after the crash, it was drugs and alcohol was the only thing that I had to cope
with. Yeah.
And so then I was subsequently sentenced to 4 years, 9 months imprisonment mm-hmm. for negligently causing serious injury and reckless conduct endangering life. Mm-hmm. I served 2.5 years and I'm out on parole now trying to give back, and I can't make up for it, but I can try and make it worth something.
Mm, mm, that's Amazing. That is a lot. And we've talked about on this show, we talk about resilience. This is what we've been talking about this term. And I've been talking about emotional regulation and sometimes the dysfunctional choices that we make just to cope with the emotions that we're going through. So, yeah, really understandable, like, where you were at that time. But I think it's absolutely amazing that you navigated all of that challenging experience and you're here today to talk to us. And I get the sense that you've learned so much and grown through this experience so much. I think that's what they talk about, what you grow through.
100%. I spent so long as a teenager trying not to learn anything and just ignoring all, pieces of good advice that were thrown my way, to then, landing in jail, and I was on this unbelievable learning curve because I was so desperate and so eager to change and turn my life around and be a better person. Mm. And I did it in the worst possible place. I spent my early life looking for negative influences, just actively seeking out negative influences. Mm. And then I was put in a place where I was surrounded by negative influences, actively seeking out positive influences, and actually for the first time in my life looking to do the right thing.
Mm.
So I've never made it easy on myself.
Yeah, sometimes we can be our own worst enemies. So let's rewind that a little bit. So could you share a little bit more about how you initially responded to that unexpected change? Like, what were some of the emotions that you did encounter? And then what was it where you decided, where you kind of were motivated to embrace the reality that you now found yourself in? Like, was there like a pivotal moment like that for you?
There were several. There were several rock bottoms along the way.
Mm.
In the lead up to the crash, my drug and alcohol really started kind of as I was really disengaging from school. I was a musician, and being this short little kid with a high-pitched voice who loved to, play guitar and sing and jump on stage, it was quite an easy target for bullies.
Mm.
And I really took a lot of that to heart. I went to a boarding school, and then it became good sport in my boarding house just to shred on Zach whenever he started playing or singing guitar. And so it really got to me.
Mm.
And I put that part of myself aside, because I was so vulnerable.
Mm.
I associated vulnerability with weakness very early on.
Mm.
And so I stopped playing guitar and I stopped singing and I stopped writing music very early on when I was probably like 13, 14.
Mm.
And I put on this tough guy facade, and, music was how I dealt with my emotions.
Mm.
It was my vent. It was my outlet.
Mm.
And so putting on this tough guy facade, I was actively looking for something to deal with my emotions. And I don't know why, but I actively sought out drugs and alcohol. Mm. That was the answer for me at that time.
Mm.
And, when I first, started using drugs and started drinking, at a glance, it seemed as though, that was what I was looking for. Mm. I didn't care. I wasn't having to face those emotions.
Mm.
And so I very quickly latched onto that.
Mm.
As I mentioned earlier, I was using drugs and alcohol to deal with things like, being stressed and being anxious or not being able to sleep. And, I would use drugs and especially weed, to deal with all these little inconveniences in life,
mm-hmm.
And all those little hardships that we face on a day-to-day basis. For example, you've come into work and nothing here is working. A teenage me would have smoked a bong. I've got to smoke a bong. I've got to chill out.
Yeah.
And so for all these little things, I was dependent on drugs and alcohol. And so, in the lead up to the crash, I was with this really toxic girl. It was just an incredibly abusive relationship. I'd isolated myself from my mother.
Yeah.
Me and my mum have always been really close.
Yeah.
She's never tolerated, me using drugs and binge drinking and any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so between that and my partner that I was with, it had driven a wedge between me and my mum. Mm. So I was very isolated from positive influences and, guidance.
Yeah.
Um,
It does tend to happen in abusive relationships too. Yeah. Like it's one of the, it's, I guess it can be quite an unconscious thing, but people do find themselves separated from loved ones.
And so, you know, having drugs and alcohol is the only thing I use to deal with things, you know, as my relationship got worse and worse, I lent more and more into the drugs and alcohol. I'd surrounded myself with just
people who were
enablers. Yeah, yeah, enablers, you know.
Yeah.
And so when I crashed my car,
yeah,
and, you know, I talk about it in our book, Why the Fallen, and the specifics of everything. Obviously, for time's sake, we don't need to go into the specifics of that night. But what I can say is after that crash, right, so I've nearly killed four people that I consider friends. It was a horrible, horrible crash. And I was very traumatized by it.
Yeah.
And I was dealing with a lot of guilt and shame, self-hatred.
Yeah.
Just, I didn't like myself after that. I was so incredibly ashamed.
Yeah.
And so now I was dealing with real mental health problems.
Yeah.
I was dealing with depression, post-traumatic stress, anxiety,
yeah,
real self-loathing.
Yeah.
And I had this crazy internal war because I was completely aware of the fact that it was drugs and alcohol that led me to that crash. And it was drugs and alcohol that was the root cause of all of my problems in my life, right? But now drugs and alcohol were the only thing that I knew and that I had to cope with what I was going through.
Yeah.
And so that was the first point in my life, and I was 21 years old, and I was so acutely aware of how badly I needed help, right?
Yeah.
And there's a rapper, 360, and he says, you think having a near-death experience would make a smart person take their life more serious? And I was so aware I needed to do that, but I couldn't. And I lent even further into the drugs, you know, and I started using ice, and I completely threw myself off the edge of a cliff. And I was desperate to try and change. I was actually trying to enroll in the army after the crash because it was like, I know I need something.
Something.
I need a total rehaul.
Yeah.
An overhaul of my whole self.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't have the strength and the ability to get away from the drugs and make those hard changes.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
there's
six stages of change, and a lot of people abandon people if they don't see behaviour of change. They go, "Well, this person doesn't really want to change," and so I'm just gonna like forget them. But actually, change is, it's essential that we get help from other people to change, and other people are instrumental in a change process, and there's so many reasons for it. So I'm glad that you've touched on it, because I talk about it a lot, and I think people are really quick to kind of go, oh, well, this person doesn't really want to change, so good luck to them, and they kind of wipe them off. And abandonment is such an underlying, that disconnection is not how it's really meant to be. We are meant to be connected and in things together and facing things together. So it was nice. It's lovely to hear that deep down you knew there was like this cry in your soul that was like, I really need help, like, but you just couldn't find it at
That's
the time
it.
Straight
and,
away.
And, you know, and that was the thing at that point, you know, this, it happened, it's like the boy who cried wolf. It's the story of every drug addict that they burn all of their bridges. And I had long since burnt all of my bridges. And I was aware of that too. And so when it came to jail, so I was sentenced, you know, I had to sit there and watch my mum bawl her eyes out in the courtroom, and that was probably harder than the sentence itself.
Yeah.
That was a very hard thing to watch because my mum never did anything wrong.
Yeah.
And she was just getting torn apart. But so, you know, on my first day in jail, I promised myself I was going to leave in better shape than when I came in.
Yeah.
And I joke and say that, you know, a shower and a sandwich would have actually been a step in the right direction, you know, because I was just disheveled and skinny and just a mess.
Yeah.
And so I had no idea what better shape looked like.
Yeah.
Right. I'd never looked after myself. I'd never been to gym. I'd neglected my own mental health for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I had no idea what better shape was.
Yeah.
And so every day I just had that little landmark, just go to bed a better person than when you woke up. And so it started with just push-ups, you know, and sit-ups, and eating regular meals, and sleeping, you know, shaving. That was another thing that, you know, I started doing as well, making my bed, you know, so all these small little things. But the real the real moment for me that was so life-changing was on the phone to my mum one day. You know, I'd been thinking about how I can try and use what what's happened to bring some good. And so I'd tossed the idea around in my head about writing a book and writing my story. But then the very next thought was, who wants to hear from a drink-driving junkie who's in jail? No one, right? But so on the phone to my mum one day, mum actually said to me, goes, you know, I've been thinking about writing a book. And I was like, holy crap, I've been thinking about writing one too. And so, you know, and don't get me wrong, the first 6 months of my sentence in jail was, like, nearly got the better of me. I was so lost and broken. And I had no idea. It was like being in an endless corridor. Doesn't matter how far you run forward, it just doesn't end, right? And it was hectic. And so when me and my mum, you know, kind of made that pact that we were just going to start writing. We'll just start writing and see what happens. I had a landmark to work towards. I had some goal. I had something that I could do every day. I could just wake up and do a little bit of writing. And so pretty much as soon as I got off the phone to her, and that was about 3 weeks into my sentence, I was at Port Phillip, which is like arguably one of Australia's or Victoria's worst prisons. It's a hellhole. And like I ran to my cell and I just started writing. And it just went, I started writing. I just wanted to have a good time. What bad could possibly come from a good time? And then I wrote in chronological order from like the age of 10. I just started writing. And what happened was I started working through things. I had never worked through things. I'd just bottled stuff up and I'd used drugs to drive a wedge between me and emotions. And I'd turned away from all of it. And so suddenly, like, you know, I'm writing about things that happened when I was 13. You know, I was writing about the bullying in school. I was writing about these horrible events in my life that had, like, really left a mark on me that I'd never thought about. And so I'm sweating and I'm crying and I'm anxious and I'm emotional. And I realize I'm actually working through things. And so it became abundantly clear that there was some stuff that I had to deal with. I really had to deal with this stuff. I couldn't sleep. Now that I was aware of all of these things and I didn't have drugs and alcohol, I was like face to face with the reality of my life. And so I actively sought out counseling, and you know, I saw a psychologist pretty much the whole time I was in jail. And so that wanting to leave in a better shape, just keeping that in my head, I, you know, and that's on top of trying to navigate my way through the politics of jail and everything like that. You know, that's
reality.
And that's that was hectic in and of itself. You know, and in writing that book, that was such a pinnacle moment, because before I even I've never completed anything in my life, right? Prior to jail, like I've wasted every opportunity. I'd start something, put it down 2 minutes later. So in writing that book, I don't think I'd ever finish it. I didn't think I'm going to be an author. I just started writing. And it was so cathartic. I just kept writing. And then I got so far through the book, I'm like, oh, I might as well finish it.
I might as well.
And me and my mum had become so close, because so what me and mum were doing was I was writing everything down by hand on loose leaf paper. And then I was either mailing it out to her or I was smuggling it to her during visits. because the jail didn't like that I was writing my story. They didn't like it. They didn't like really
supportive of the process.
They weren't supportive of a lot of the things that I did in jail to try and turn my life around. For whatever reason. But so mum was reading things that I've never told her. You know, about crimes, about the state of my mental health, about things that had happened, and about the level of my drug addiction. And so it was heartbreaking for her to read. But there were no more lies anymore. It was all out in the
so
open.
Freeing.
And so, I had my teammate back. You know what I mean? She had her son
and
back.
She could understand it. Like it's like a, you know, when we don't know, we invent all kinds of reasons why. So to actually get the explanation from the horse's mouth, so to speak, and understand it, amazing. There's also a couple of other wonderful things that you did in that process. And this is what I talk about with the change process. It's very organic. It's something that we actually will do organically without even really consciously thinking of it quite often. But the more conscious we can be about it, the more we can do it intentionally then. So a couple of really key things you did. Number one, you just wanted to be better, right? So that's an identity shift. So the deepest level of change we can make is when we go, you know, I'm a smoker, I'm not a smoker. I'm a drinker, I am not a drinker. And it's like, if when you fully integrate a change and you fully become the non-smoker, if someone offered you a smoke, you'd go, no, I don't smoke. It's like a, you don't even think about it anymore because it's become a part of who you are as a human.
Yeah.
And so I can hear that was a real strong, that's kind of where you thought, I just want to be better every day, which means you were approaching this from that really deep level of identity, which is
100%
extraordinary. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing, I encourage people here all of the time through the show here to write down stuff. And not everyone is a journaler and not everyone is going to be a wordy person, but you can do it in so many different ways. And we'll talk about that a bit later because I like to leave people with a bit of a call to action at the end of the show.
Absolutely. Look, and for me, it's in hindsight, my turning my life around, like I've always been a pretty resilient person. I haven't dealt with things in the right way. Most of the time throughout my life. But, you know, it was like this trifecta. So going to jail, my mind, body and soul was broken, right? Total disarray.
Yeah.
Mind, body and soul completely out of whack, right? And so the book and the psychology work that I did, right, fixed my mind.
Yeah.
The work that I did in the gym fixed my body.
Yeah.
And I spent 2.5 years training. I was training 5 days a week.
Yeah.
2 days a week, I was training 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Like, so I fixed the body, fixed the mind. You know, I mentioned early on that I was a musician in school.
Yeah.
I've been writing songs since I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I put that aside because of bullying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's my soul.
Yeah.
Music is like who I am. Yeah. It's how I express my soul and how I express myself.
Yeah.
So when I was in jail, you know, after 6 months, there was like, at this time I was at Fulham and there was like 4 or 5 guitars in the entire jail. It was like 1,000 prisoners.
Yeah.
And after 6 months, I finally managed to get one.
Yeah.
And I swear I was never going to give it up. And so, and again, you know, like, you know, I was surrounded by toxic masculinity and here I am singing Lewis Capaldi and like, you know, like being emotional.
Yeah.
You know, and that rubbed people up the wrong way. And I had to fight for my right to be able to sing and play music.
Wow.
But I started writing music in jail again.
Yeah.
I started singing and I started playing guitar every single day.
Yeah.
And that fixed my soul because that was my love. That's my passion.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was like this trifecta. I managed to fix the mind, body and the soul in this horrible place.
Well, on the note of your music, why don't we play one of your songs?
I'd love to.
I'd love to hear them. So I've got a couple here. Which one do you think?
I think it's very fitting to play Start Again first.
All right. So let's go to Start Again. Enjoy this one by Sac Jones, Start Again.
As I stand here waiting on the outside, loneliness stands with me watching time go by. My memory fades of what's been before, trying to prepare for what life has in store. I don't think that I need anybody with me, but when I'm gone it might be nice if someone missed me. Just hold me in your heart if you can't hold me in your arms, and I'll leave tonight before the sun rises. And I run away in my sleep where they can't hear me scream. Sometimes you were with me in my dreams. Don't worry, I will find my way. I'm on my own, but that's okay. I've been knocked down, it's not the end. Pick myself up and start. keep bleeding. Can you please just hear the words that I've gotta say? Instead of just telling me to go the fuck away. Sometimes I wish I could just coast through and not care. But when I'm gone, will you notice that I am not there? Just hold me in your heart if you can't hold me in your arms. And I'll leave tonight before the sunrise. And I run away in my sleep where they can't hear me scream. Sometimes
welcome back. This is 99.1 Yarra Valley FM. I hope you enjoyed that song by Zach Jones. He's here in the studio talking about starting again and his amazing story of really hitting rock bottom and dragging yourself up by your bootstraps, getting going again. I love how you talked about repairing yourself on all those different levels, you know, your mind, your heart, your soul, and your body, your actual physical body. It's an awesome, I think it'll be really inspiring for lots of people to hear your story. So let's keep going. I want to talk a little bit more about the book that you did co-author with your mum, because I'd love people to know where they can get a hold of it, but also what was the point where you knew it was an opportunity to get your story out there, and how did you feel about that opportunity to kind of, and how that opportunity with your mum played a role in your resilience and your ability to keep going and keep sharing your story.
For sure. So our book is called Why the Fallen. And Why the Fallen is available at our website, www.whythefallen.com. It's available as a hard copy, an ebook, and an audio book. There are a few bookshops that have picked it up, but we are independently published. And so we're doing all of the groundwork ourselves.
Yeah.
But so, you know, writing this book, I was in jail.
Mm.
All of the legwork of actually putting it together,
mm.
you know, even, you know, my mum took all of my handwritten pages and typed them up.
Yeah.
You know, so all of that work bringing the book to life before I was even out of jail was a credit to my mum.
Yeah.
But so, you know, for me, I was like, I flunked out of school hardcore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some of it apparently did stick, but, you know, when I read the first few pages of what I'd written to my mum, like, she was just blown away.
Mm.
She goes, "Did you really write that?"
Mm.
And she would show, you know, as I was writing the book, she would show different people the chapters that I was writing, and they were just really moved by my writing. They couldn't believe how profound and insightful, reflective it was.
Mm.
And, you know, I heard several times, "Did Zach really write this?" Mm. Like, you know, he hasn't, well, I couldn't have got it off the internet, you know. I was in jail.
No AI.
That's it. There wasn't AI or anything. And
yeah.
So I, you know, as I got more of this feedback, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, okay, I'm really, because all I was doing was just telling my story as honestly as I could.
Mm.
Every emotion, every detail.
Mm.
And it was moving. And, you know, we showed people that had been battling with drugs and alcohol certain chapters.
Mm.
And, like, you know, brought them to tears.
Mm.
And made them reflect.
Mm.
And and made them feel as though, oh, if this guy can do it, I can too.
Yeah, and you know, not alone. Mm. Not alone in this. This is like normalizing.
Yeah, and encouraging strategies. People to seek help and to start talking about it.
Mm.
And so, look, by the time I got out, the book was done. We'd done the editing and everything like that, and we had the book. It looked like a phone book, you know, because it was printed on A4 paper.
Yeah.
And so when I got out, you know, we just hit the ground running, and we independently published the book, and we just started, you know, trying to do promoting, and you know, both me and my mum really had no idea.
Yeah.
But you know, mum had really been putting the word out there.
Mm.
And one thing that has driven this book is the fact that there are so many parents out there pulling their hair out, good people who have kids that are doing the exact same things that I was doing, you know, or that are starting to show those earlier warning signs. They're disengaged from school, they're hanging out with the wrong people, they're doing drugs, they've been arrested, they're in toxic relationships, all of these red flags.
Yeah.
And there are all these parents, there are so many, and they're too scared to speak up.
Mm.
But so they heard about our book and they heard about our story, they heard about my mum, and you know, they'd reach out and go, what do I do?
Mm.
You know, how do I help my child?
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the massive driving forces behind this book has been the parents.
Yeah.
And have been the families of people just like me.
Yeah.
They just have no idea what they can do to help.
Yeah.
And it made it so clear that, you know, I'm not the only one who's doing this.
No.
And my mom's not the only person who's going through it. And that was like such a big motivator for us.
And I love the fact that you're doing it together as well, because it was, because even in and of itself, that is like the relationship kept you both going, and the fact exactly what you said when you were writing it all out and there was no secrets anymore.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like, it's kind of that idea, we're only as sick as our secrets, you know, and the more openly we can talk about things and explain ourselves to each other, and it actually is a real, it draws us together.
Yeah.
So it's just a great story.
And every parent would know, you know, trying to explain things to your child is like talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
You can try and explain to them what they're doing and what they're doing to you.
Yeah.
And we just don't get it. Mm. And so, you know, my portion of the book is, you know, about everything that I've done wrong, right?
Mm.
And then you have my mum's side of things as well, which is as a parent who has tried to do everything right by their child.
Mm.
And just watching their child destroy themselves.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
And it's this really powerful thing. I still struggle to read my mum's chapters.
Yeah.
Because knowing that it's like, you know, I did all these things and knowing the effect that it had on her and reading it like that.
Yeah, and especially if you were close, right?
Like
you said, you had a really, and I think that's what I see a lot too. I see parents that are really close with their kids, and they're just, it's like that bridge is just not there for whatever. And I kind of do know now because of the work I do, and especially from the neuroscience, you don't actually have a complete brain until you're about 25.
100%.
So a lot of the faculties that are needed just in order to analyze a risk and how risky something is, kids can't do it. They cannot do it. People will struggle to do that until they're, you know, into their 20s. So, you know, we are talking to them and we're trying to give them logic and reason and and try to help them.
Mm.
And they're just glazing over in the eyes because they actually don't have a brain that can actually comprehend it. Like, and that's not like...
When you say about glazing over in the eyes, I remember so many times my parents were giving me lectures and, you know, I would. I'd get this fog over my face and I'd just tune out.
Yeah.
But so... It's so crazy as a young person when you read my mum's writing.
Yeah.
You see what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see the consequences your actions are having on other people.
Yeah.
You know, and so I do public speaking now and I talk so much about consequences.
Yeah.
And one thing I say is the consequences other people face as a result of your actions are always worse.
Yeah.
Are always worse.
Yeah.
Because they're not deserved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what's so powerful about the disposition between mine and my mum's writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that you did it together. And I think let's talk a little bit more about the parents, but I'm just going to play a couple of sponsors and another song before we do. So what would you like to play next? What are you thinking?
Look, let's get into a rap song. I've got a song called Through Flames, yep. And I actually have the radio edit here on my phone because there's some swearies in it.
Excellent.
And so just for all the young listeners, we've taken those out.
Excellent, well done.
So this is called Through Flames, and this is an honest look into the mind of a recovering drug addict.
Okay, sounds deep. Let's play it. What's it called?
Through Flames.
Through Flames, okay. Will you press play and I'll press play?
Yeah, it's all good to go.
Can't erase the mistakes that I've made. Even today I'm still feeling the pain, and it's real in my brain. No, I'm feeling for change, it's a new day. I'm still feeling the same, cause I feel I'm to blame. Not sleeping at night, better believe it's from the demons inside. Time goes by, it repeats every night. I just can't make it right, doesn't matter how I try. I'm still burning in water, drowning in fire. It's the reason why I spent my life trying to get higher. I was trying to get by, but I'd be a liar if I said it ever worked, cause I only left my mind fucked. Wish I could, but I can't take it back. And I'm allowed to be pissed off, don't tell me to relax. Only angry at myself, I know I need the help. I just feel it, I don't deserve it, cause you need the help as well. And that's my fault, sorry doesn't cut it. I'm just trying to face it now, cause I spent too long as running. I was looking for an out, but I've accepted that I've done it. Now I'm trying to figure out how to forgive myself for nothing. World is great, but I'm here today, trying to see through the rain. Coming down and there's no one around, I will fight through the flames. Tell myself it was just another lesson. The present is a gift, so consider it a blessing. I was just a little kid heading in the wrong direction, sucking on a pipe, trying to forget shit. Silent as death is, I tried to take a breath in. Didn't have a real mate on my entire friends. It's now absolutely nothing is the only thing I'm left with. Picking up a dictionary to find what a friend is. And I know that it sounds sad, honestly don't worry, cause I'm truly fucking glad. See, I found an inner strength that I never knew I had, and it's only me to thank, because I was all I had. I was calling out for help, suicide was calling back. Trying to paint a pretty picture, man, I'm only painting black. I thought I hit rock bottom, then I slipped right through the cracks. Man, I'm lost in the ocean and I'm trying to get back. World is great, but I'm here today, trying to see through the rain. When the world's coming down and there's no one around, I will fight through the flames. Years in a cell, dancing on my own, man. So much so that I fell into my zone, and I made this hell my home, and I did it on my own. And that's when I realized that I'm better off alone. You don't need them, they just want to bring you down. They're happy standing around, watching as you drown, cause they know that you're a king, and they just want to take your crown. Stick a knife in your back as soon as you turn around. You're a fuck 'em, cause they've only made you stronger. Now when life gets hard, you hold on a little longer, and you wear these scars, and you just keep moving on, cause they made you hard. You're impossible to conquer, and they don't like that it's true. They always despise it. You're alright being you. Never mind, you learn to like the abuse, and you never give up, cause the side isn't you. And it's true, you don't need anyone else, cause when you really need them, they'll be knowing that it helps. So just take a deep breath and look inside of yourself. There you might find a way outside of this hell. There you might find a way outside of this hell. World is great, but I'm here today, trying to see through the rain. Coming down and there's no one around, I will fight through the flames, yeah.
Welcome back. You're listening to Zach Jones and Kim Harris on Stories of Change, and what a story we've heard this morning so far. So let's continue on hearing more about this gentleman here, like, who has gone through an extraordinary amounts of change and transition, and you've had to be very adaptable and flexible in the way that you've had to approach this, because you kind of boxed yourself in, didn't you? Embracing change isn't always easy. So can you share some of those specific moments where you found you really had to start leaning into changing the way you were thinking and being flexible and adapting to the situation you were in and changing your perspective about things? Tell us a bit about that.
Acceptance is the first and most important part of change. Mm. Until you accept that, yeah, you're the problem, you know what I mean? Mm. And that you are the solution. Mm. There's no real change that can happen. You have to be so honest and open with yourself. Mm. As a drug addict, I was a compulsive liar, you know, and I would lie to myself as well. Mm. It wasn't until the real moment for me, probably the first time in my life that I was honest with myself, and I'll skip the graphic details, but I was about, you know, a week into my sentence, just 4 years, 9 months looming in front of me. Mm. And I had this very dark moment. I was on my cell floor in Port Phillip and I was thinking about taking the quick way out. You know, and obviously I'll skip over the gory details, but right before I did something that I couldn't take back, for some reason, I asked myself, what will the legacy that I leave behind be? You know, if I'm not here tomorrow, how will I be remembered? And I had this soul-crushing moment of clarity where the answer to that question was, I was a junkie, I was a criminal, I'd nearly killed 4 people, wasted every opportunity that I was ever given, broken my mum's heart, you know, and the list just went on and on. And I didn't like that answer. Mm. That answer was soul crushing. Mm. But I really had this moment of clarity, like, I'm still here. Mm. That doesn't have to be where the story ends. That doesn't have to be my legacy. Mm. And so I felt in control of my ability to get up tomorrow morning and actually change that legacy. Mm. You know, it was another landmark. It was like, okay, well, this is the reality of my situation, right? Mm. So let's just do something today that's something positive that just adds a little lighter note to that legacy. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so change is so, so hard. But at the same time, all you are doing, you know, especially in regards to turning your own life around, right, changing your own circumstances, you need to empower yourself. Mm. You need to realize that the things that happen to us, we don't control. Mm. We make our own choices. Mm. We have to live with the consequences. Mm. Accept that which you cannot change and which is out of your control. Mm. The things that happen to us, we can't control that. Mm-mm. We control how we respond. Mm. That is, no one can take that control away from you. Mm. That ability to make your own decisions, that's on you. Mm. And when you understand that, you empower yourself. Mm. Mm. You know?
Yeah, I love the word empower. It comes from, actually, interestingly, it's about anti-slavery. So when we empower someone, we actually free them. We give them freedom. And so I love that you're using that word in that way. It's like empowering yourself is like releasing yourself from your own mental slavery and thinking about this again, thinking about it in a new way understanding that you've got the power then.
Yeah, the last line of Through Flames is take a deep breath and look inside of yourself, because then you might find a way outside of this hell. Mm. And that's what it is. I just turned within. Mm. And I was honest, you know. I can honestly sit here and say, like, I was a junkie. You know what I mean? Mm. And I went through jail, you know, and it's just one big pissing contest, you know. Mm. Who do you know? What are you in for?
Yeah.
You know, they want to know how tough you are and if you want to make a name for yourself. And I went through jail like, nah, dude, I'm here because I'm a junkie and I nearly killed 4 people because of my own stupidity. Yeah. And it was that honesty and vulnerability that really helped me get through jail. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't trying to act like a tough guy and I wasn't like, trying to be something I wasn't anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I also love that this idea of legacy. So in my company, it's called the Conscious Thinking Company, and I coach people through four areas of life. One is life itself. So that's your life energy, your life force, your health, your vitality. Through love. So that's the quality of love in your life. Do you have quality experiences with people that you're in a relationship? Do you love your work? We go into livelihood, which is how you earn a crust, like how you make money. And then legacy is the final one that I coach people. So I do legacy projects with people and coach people through the end of their life, interestingly, or that are going into pre-retirement and things like this. So all of these are incredible transitions. But I think where it all started for me in a different way that I got forced to it in my life was to really look at the legacy I wanted to leave and the mark I want to leave on the world. And really, I get that, I understand that moment where you kind of go, well, you know, to die this way, like with my, let's say, let's use a musical one, with your song unsung, you know, inside of you, would be a real shame. And it's kind of not good enough. You kind of get this feeling like, no, not good enough. And I know it's going to be hard to turn all this around.
Yeah.
But there is something powerful in that, that embracing of that moment where you go, not on my watch.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn this around now.
Absolutely. Look, and, you know, my whole MO is this, right? I know how hard and dark and cruel life is, right? I know what a struggle it is just day to day. I'm so aware of that. And I know everyone else is going through that exact same thing. They're experiencing the exact same reality that I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And so with the knowledge of how hard life can be, using my experience of my pain and the hardship, right, to make somebody else's journey through this life a little bit easier, or equip them with the tools to get through this life a little bit easier. There's no better purpose.
Yeah.
There's no more reasonable. There's no better reason to keep pushing on.
Yeah.
Than for the betterment of just somebody else. Complete stranger, even.
Yeah.
You know?
I hear you. And I think that moment, because I think your resilience was completely tested in a way that, like, that people are being tested, interestingly. Like, the prevalence of suicide and suicidal ideation in our society right now is extremely high. And anxiety and depression is extremely high. So there's a lot of people suffering in silence. And I think in sharing your story, exactly, you're putting your hand out and sort of saying, come on, mate, I'll help you through this, because that's what you wanted. You wanted someone to put you to bed and give you a sandwich, you know, to tuck you in and kind of go, we can do this, we can do it together. And I hear it like from, you know, the people that I talk to, and this soul kind of exactly crushing cry, you know, that you can hear in the world.
Look, one thing I learnt being in jail is this. Even a thug needs a hug.
Good, well said. I really like that.
That's it.
Even a thug needs a hug.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that should be like on a bumper sticker.
100%. Absolutely.
Very good. That's a good quote. All right, so what about we play another song then? We're going up to the hour again, so we're going to hear the news, and we'll continue on with your story if that's okay, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I could talk forever about it. Yes. Look, I think now's a really good time to play my latest single, which is another rap song.
Yep.
It's called Extraordinary, right? And so we just spoke about empowering yourself, right? And being really honest with yourself. Extraordinary is about understanding that your true self is the most extraordinary version of you. Understanding that every single person out there is extraordinary and beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's what extraordinary is. It was the realization that I didn't have to be something I wasn't.
No.
Who I really was all I needed. It was all I was ever looking for.
Awesome. Let's listen to the song.
Too bad to be good, I don't belong in a school, no. I don't wanna belong in the hood,
So tell me, where the fuck do I fit in? When I can't even tell where the difference is. Where the fuck am I supposed to draw the line? When the answer to the question goes, be almost wrong or right, It's like I never had a chance, cause me, being myself was never in high demand. Trying to be true to myself, but trying to be what you ask. You just hate me either way, but at least I can make you laugh, haha. I just never found it funny, I've been searching for a brighter day. It's never fucking sunny, trying to find myself. My reflection's always running, wanna tell you how I feel, cause I've always just kept my tongue in. But enough is enough, I owe myself this much. Now it's time to bring it up. People tell me it's just life, and my friends don't give a fuck. They're never there when I need them, so I think I'll give them up, It's like I'm kicking a bad habit, getting stabbed in the back by people that never matter. Between fake friends and inner strength, I think I'll take the latter. Cause when life gets hard, yo, that's when they seem to scatter. So I'ma stand on these 2 feet,
better believe.
And that's the only support I need. See, I know they got my back, and I know they'll never leave. The old Zach is dead, but now it's no time to grieve.
Finally I see the man I'm supposed to be. I finally believe I'm extraordinary. A fire inside of me, an ocean in my dreams, had to crash and burn to sea. I'm extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary. I finally believe I'm extraordinary.
Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, but who and what I'm supposed to be, that's not for you to decide. See, being yourself, that's the only way to survive. You might be in the wrong place, but it's at the right time, just give it time. In your journey through life, your own value and worth, that's up for you to find. No one's ever gonna tell you just how brightly you shine. They hate the way you're brave enough to put your heart on the line. And so the hatred will either make you or break you. It's all about how you let the negativity shape you. Just because they said it doesn't mean what they said is true. It's only that you're better, that they wanna degrade you. Keep your head high and your middle finger up. It takes time to master the art of not giving a fuck. Instead, just focus on your life, start living it up. Cause if you're wasting your time, you're just giving it up.
The man I'm supposed to be, I finally believe I'm extraordinary. A fire inside of me, an ocean in my dreams, had to crash and burn to sea. I'm extraordinary, extraordinary, I'm extraordinary. I finally believe I'm extraordinary.
This morning we've been talking to Zach Jones, who's been regaling us with his story of resilience, which is quite profound and had a really big impact on him and his journey from here and where that's going to go. But what I'm interested about is with the time that you did serve in prison, tell me a little bit about how you sustained resilience over the long haul. Like, you knew you had to sort of go through this process. So how did you keep up your resilience?
How did I keep up my resilience? I had a desire in my head not to break my mum's heart anymore, first of all. And so, you know, one of the driving forces behind the choices that I'd made was, you know, I don't want to have to see my mum crying. You know, because it sticks with me seeing her cry in the front of that courtroom the day I got sentenced. I don't want to see her like that anymore. You know what I mean? And I'd seen her like that a lot throughout my life, getting expelled from schools, you know, her having to come pick me up from a police station or a hospital or whatever. And so that was a big driving force. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to bounce back. Another one was because I knew that, or, you know, in writing my book and hearing the feedback, I believed that my story had the potential to help inspire people to change, right? And so in regards to young offenders and young criminals, which when I was in jail, who I was really thinking of the most, was I had to get through jail. I had to go through jail mainstream, which is like general population jail, right? So I knew that no matter what, you know, I had to standard fight where I had to fight. And, you know, I had to lead with my chin so that when I got out, I could talk to young offenders, you know, and say, yeah, man, I did jail. I did real jail. You know, I didn't go to, like, you know, protective custodies, or I didn't go to, you know, I did get out to minimum security and stuff eventually through good behaviour. But, you know, they can look at me as someone who did their jail with their head held high.
Yeah.
Which means a lot to young offenders. You know what I mean? And show them that I did that but still turned my life around. So that was a big driving force in just getting through the day-to-day politics of jail. And then there's everybody else too. So there's parents that I wanted to give hope to, that they, that their children could turn their lives around as well. I was as bad as you get in every sense of the word. Mind, body, soul, broken.
Yeah.
And if I could turn my life around, then there's still hope for those kids too.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was, I wanted to get out and I wanted to show people what happened if you neglected your mental health, what happened if you lean too much into drugs and alcohol. You know, I'm not, and I say it in all of my public speaking presentations, I'm not here to tell you not to drink, you know, I'm not here to tell you any of that. I would be a hypocrite considering the life that I have lived, but I want you to look at me and see where it leads if you abuse it and if you do it for the wrong reasons and if you keep doing it.
I love that. And I guess it's clear the way that you adapted to that situation and you were in it for the long haul and had that kind of approach. It's led to personal growth, which we can hear in the way that you talk, but also your professional growth. So you've just touched on your public speaking. So illustrate how your journey has evolved and how those lessons you've learned have started to impact your life going forward with your speaking and things like that.
Absolutely. So... You know, I got out and I really hit the ground running with promoting the book. And we did some, you know, we sent out some emails to some different media outlets. And so the first one that got back to us was 3AW.
Yep.
So it was with Neil Mitchell.
Yep.
I got on and I spoke about my car crash and about road safety with him. From that, A Current Affair reached out to us, and then all these different media outlets picked us up, and that gave us just enough exposure for one or two people. And, you know, it was Danny and Diane Burke from Vermont Footy Club that reached out to us first. And my crash was in Vermont. Like 2 minutes up the road from where I did my first presentation was where I crashed my car.
Wow.
So it was this crazy full circle moment. But I gave my first presentation to the under 17s Vermont Footy Club. And you know, the parents were like, oh, I can't believe this is his first public speaking gig. But what really struck me was the fact, because, you know, in school I saw 100 presentations and, like, I laughed and joked through every single one of them, and, like, I just wasn't attentive. I just didn't care. You know what I mean? But I just noticed that everyone in there was attentive, and they just, it was straight after footy training. They'd come in and they'd sat down. So they're already tired and probably just want to go home. But I had their attention for the whole time that I was talking. And a bunch of them reached out to me afterwards and said, like, wow, I was really moved by that. And so I was like, wow, the young people are actually listening to this story. Because I do. I talk about bullying in school. I talk about trying to find who I was. You know, and I talk about the drugs and the alcohol and where it led in the toxic relationships. And so they hear all that and they go, yeah, well, I'm going through that. Well, yeah, my mate's, you know, starting to smoke weed a lot. You know, my mate's disengaged from school. And so I touch base on all these really prevalent issues in teenagers. And they resonate with that.
You talk about it in a real way. Like, you're not sugarcoating it for them.
That's it.
You're and not so, hiding anything or telling them what they should or shouldn't be doing.
It's so brutally honest. And I still tear up during my presentations too. But especially when I talk about road safety.
Yeah.
And because this is the thing, like, you know, I say to kids, I'm not here to tell you not to drink and whatever, right? I'd be a hypocrite. But I want you to understand that one thing that I am so hardline against is drink driving. And not just drink driving, reckless driving. It's driving while tired, under the influence, driving while distracted.
Driving when you're emotional.
And so I ask, every single one of my presentations, I ask this question. I say, you know, because I'm mainly doing footy clubs at the moment. The question changes depending on who I'm talking to. But for footy clubs, I stand there and I ask, who here is a good footy player? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
And now what's crazy is I really have to push them to get someone to raise their hand.
Wow.
No one wants to raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm a good footy player. But when someone does, I go, look, did you become a good footy player in 120 hours?
Yeah.
And they say, no, of course not.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah. And I want you to remember that 120 hours of footy doesn't make you a good footy player.
Mm.
120 hours on the road does not make you a good driver.
No.
And I back that up by saying the fact that so many of you were so humble that you would not raise your hand when I asked if you're a good footy player.
Mm.
But when you get, like, especially young guys, when you get around the boys, you're all good drivers, you're all Mr. Drifter, Speed Racer, you know, keep that same humility that you had when I asked you, are you a good footy player? When someone asks if you're a good driver, or, you know, or when you're on the road, keep that same energy.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard-hitting one. That really does put it into perspective for them because, I mean, it's one thing to destroy your own life with drugs and alcohol, but you take that and you put it on the road and it just destroys worlds. Destroys worlds. Not just the people in the crash, the families of witnesses. The list goes on and on. First responders.
Yeah.
Everyone gets so affected by road trauma.
Yeah.
It is such a problem.
Yeah. It's a good segue for next week. I'm interviewing a lady by the name of Christy Roberts, and she actually did lose her son in a car accident. And next week it's Grief Awareness Day. So it's just, definitely we grieve when we've lost something, when there's some kind of trauma involved. So
thoughts go out to her.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal lady. So that's coming up next week. But yeah, exactly what you're saying, this is a common thing. And so it's really good that you're educating them about the realities of it.
Yeah.
Because I think as an educator, sometimes I think parents and teachers, although well-meaning, we are trying to educate them, but from a different lived experience. We're educating them from the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and the why fors, rather than this is an example of what can go wrong.
Yeah, look, and I think that's part of where my presentation has so much power. You know, even before road safety, you just look at drug and alcohol awareness. I learn about drugs and alcohol from a giraffe in the back of a van.
Yeah.
Harold, that was my drug and alcohol. And it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
I talk about it, and I say this start, everything I'm about to tell you guys is lived experience.
Yeah.
I'm not a first responder. I'm not a cop. I'm not a...
Yeah.
I barely completed school. I don't have a uni degree in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when I talk about road safety...
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a cop. I'm a perpetrator.
Yeah.
Like, I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
And that removes that it could never happen to me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, well, this is you standing in front of you telling you that it can happen to you.
It can happen, yeah.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, I make a point of saying it, like, I'm robbing ignorance from you guys. I'm taking that away from you. You guys don't get to say, oh, I didn't know better.
No.
You know, I'm taking all that away from you. You've heard my story. Now you know better. Because my story is going to be your story if you don't listen.
Yeah.
And it is. I believe more in it now than ever. Every presentation I do, the feedback that I get from it, I realise that I'm in this incredible position to really speak to young people about it. Because I've done presentations with different organisations, you know, that have first responders. And as soon as they see like a police uniform get up, most kids just switch off because it's cool not to listen to the police.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah.
But when they hear it from me, it hits a little bit different.
Yeah, it's good. I think I'm really proud that you're doing this kind of work. It's just so essential. And like I said, you just need someone to normalize it too, like to the point where, you know, I was having a hard time with bullying. I was having a hard time with, you know, getting, you know, into trouble and didn't really want to go to school. Like, it says no teenager ever.
Yeah,
like,
literally. Really? It's unheard of.
I mean, oh, no, shocking. You know, so it's like, yeah, you're meeting them where they're at. And, like, that's a big part of the work I do. I just want to find out what's actually really... Let's start there. Like, let's just start where you're at and then we can build from there.
Yeah.
But if we don't acknowledge it honestly in the way that you did, you know, like you had those moments of honesty with yourself but looking yourself square in the mirror and deciding, I think I can do better than this. And yeah, and now you share.
Turns out I can.
Yeah, turns out.
And if I can, you guys can too, believe me.
That was you two with one great song there, talking about lots of the things that we're talking about today with Zach, all about being, we're in this journey together. And when we have these experiences, the more open we are to sharing them in a really real way, we actually connect with each other way deeper. And we're all seeing the problems of disconnection in our society right now. Even though we have all these ways to connect, we are more disconnected than we've ever been. So here at Stories of Change, we want to try and arrest all of that and turn that all around and start talking about our stories and sharing our stories. So if you've got a personal story you'd love to share, reach out to me via social and perhaps I'll interview you on the show. But today we are interviewing Zach Jones, musician, author. He's had an incredible story so far, this up until now. Your story is a real testament to the fact that resilience isn't just about bouncing back, right? We don't just have this one-time thing and then we're going to turn it all around and it's all going to be magical. It's not just about bouncing back, it's about rising higher, like taking the experiences that we have and rising above them in some way. So before we wrap up, could you share a message of hope and empowerment for our listeners who might be navigating some of their own challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. Look, I said this to you just off air before, you know, first of all, you know, I wrote this in a little short story that's coming out eventually. And it is, something is only impossible before you start and after you quit. And I have such a profound understanding of that, because I remember when I was on drugs and I wanted to get off, but I couldn't. And I was thinking, wow, like this is impossible. I can't do it. And like I managed to. It took a lot of work, but I did. And the other thing that is so important, because it's where I went off the rails, was I gave up my identity and who I truly was. A, to protect myself, but B, because I wanted to be what I thought other people wanted me to be. And I spent, you know, 10, 12 years searching desperately to find who I was, when I'd cast that aside long ago. I spent so long looking for external influences and external remedies to fix this hole in my heart and to find who I was and what I was. But the truth was, like, I was running from that because I thought it was weak, and I thought it wasn't what people wanted me to be. But when I got back in touch with my true self, when I reacquainted myself with Zach, the real Zach, all of my problems slowly started to fix themselves one by one. Things started to fall back into place. I found my path again. And so, you know, in the book The Alchemist, it's the same story, that he searches far and wide to find something that was with him all along. And that is the most valuable insight that I could give anybody, that your true self, the side of you that you're scared to show everybody else, the side of you that is vulnerable, it's not weak. It's so powerful, and it is capable of so much if you actually embrace it.
Wonderful. I love that book, The Alchemist, by Paulo Coelho. I actually read that to my kids.
Did you?
I used to homeschool my kids.
That is part of my reading list for turning your life around. So my mum sent me that book, right? And she sent me that book, and then I read The Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, I love that book too.
Yeah, two books right there.
How good are they?
Five People You Meet in Heaven as well was another one.
Yeah.
Those books were like so fundamental to the change in perspective that I had while I was in jail.
So amazing. And I love The Celestine Prophecy. I like the bit in that book where everyone learns to be quiet and just let the person who feels the need to speak.
Yeah.
Have you ever practiced that?
Like, absolutely. It talks more about that in The Celestine Vision as well.
Oh, okay.
Where you're sitting in a circle and there is that natural flow from person to person to person. And so when everything kind of feels like it's halting, it's because one person is is kind of hogging the spotlight, for lack of a better word. But then, you know, when it comes your turn and conversation just happens, like it is between you and me, like the dynamic of just I talk and then there's that natural end, and that's that ability for you to speak as well, and that's when true messages are conveyed. It's such an incredible...
It's a really cool feeling.
Yeah.
And I think it's also... Sometimes there's nothing that needs to be said. And I think that's, like, I joke about it with some of my friends who we practice this sort of way of communicating, and where you're just like blissed out because you don't even need to say anything after that point, like where you've just had that kind of conversation. And I am teaching my kids this, interestingly. So
that's awesome.
We try.
Wait, you're teaching your kids silence?
I'm teaching exactly what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
of course.
Like, just wait until you actually have a sincere, honest urge to say something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just remain quiet.
Absolutely. You
know? And it's
don't just wait for your turn to speak.
No. Yeah. No. And some really interesting conversations have ensued with my children. My 13-year-old daughter, particularly, she got really cranky and just had this outburst. And we were like, well, that was good. She got it out of her system. So... Yeah, it's been wonderful to have this experience with you today, Zach.
Very humbled. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for talking to our listeners as well about some of these things, you know, that are just so valid and important. And, like, we've all got our own struggles, you know, we've all got our own things that we're trying to find the resilience inside to overcome. And we do find ourselves in situations where we do have to be flexible and adaptable and kind of go, oh, my God, if it really does hit the fan, you know, well, we might need to do something different here. And what is that? And how do you navigate that? And really pleased to see how far you've come, your progress.
Thank you.
To let people know where they can get your book again. So it was
www.whythefallen.com. So as in the question, Why the Fallen?
Yep.
That is the title of our book.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is. It's available on our website as a hard copy, an e-book, and an audio book that was narrated by my mum and myself.
Oh, wonderful. That's
so
it.
You get to hear all the little emotions.
Excellent.
When we're reading it.
I love that. I love listening to authors read their own work.
And so, look, anyone who wants to reach out to me, I always encourage people to reach out to me.
Yeah.
All of my socials, it's Zach Jones, ZACJONES.
Yep.
Instagram, my handle is my name, so Zach Jones. It also has PHNX behind it, Phoenix.
Okay.
But so, yeah, anybody who wants to contact me regarding public speaking or just wants to talk and just, you know, get some stuff off their chest or, you know, gain some insight. Yep. I'm always available. So just reach out to me on my socials.
Excellent. And also your music. Where can people find your music?
So there are 4 singles released at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they are available on all platforms. That's Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, you name it, it's on there.
Yep.
And so those 4 singles are... all tracks from my upcoming album, House of the Black Sheep.
Yep.
So there's still another 6. There's still another 6 tracks to come from that album. And I know House of the Black Sheep. It's.
I know. I'll tell you a story about that off air.
Absolutely.
Because it's hilarious.
But so yeah, that will be available on all platforms. You know, I post to TikTok and Instagram and Facebook with updates on all of that, and I will be doing an album launch soon, so, yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, to start to wrap up, because time just flies, doesn't it?
It does.
I can't believe we've been nearly talking for 2 hours. So I'd like to, I love to, when I'm talking to the audience, just give some actionable things that they can do to start embracing and practicing some of the things you've been talking about, like even journaling, for example, or I love telling people just get a piece of paper and start writing, which is essentially what you did when you were in
I love that. I can't speak highly enough of it.
Yeah, and different people do things differently. Some people start to draw and, you know, it's just kind of find a way to get it out, I think is really good. But let's talk about some calls to action. So what would you, where should people start? You've got some great questions there.
Yeah. Look, I've got to make the call to action about road safety. I feel compelled to.
Yep.
So, you know, what I say to all young people is this, right? There was a moment when I was about to get in my car when I was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my passengers were all walking towards my car, and I stopped and asked one of my friends, I go, do you want to come with? And he took one look at me and was like, nah, look, I'll wait here, right? And then my actions were my own. But I tell everybody, don't ever be that person that just stood beside and let 4 people get into a car all intoxicated, because that could have been the last time that I ever spoke to him. And the knowledge that he could have stopped me but didn't, if we had a died, that would be a weight that he would have to carry with him for the rest of his life. It feels hard to speak up, right? But it is so easy just to be a quick voice of reason. So it is so important. Do whatever you can to stop your mates getting behind the wheel. You know, and I say this to footy clubs. On the footy field, you guys look after each other. You have each other's backs. If anything happens, you're right there behind your mates.
Yeah.
Carry that off the field too.
Yeah.
True friendship is about making sure your friends don't make dumb decisions, endanger their own lives or the lives of others, or act like idiots. You know what I mean? Get drunk and have fun. I'm not here to tell you not to drink. But look after one another. And one of the best ways to do that is before you guys drink, before you guys get drunk, give each other permission to call each other out. Not once you've already started drinking. When everyone is sober, hey guys, if I start acting like an idiot tonight, stop me. You have my permission to stop me.
Yeah.
If I try to get behind the wheel, stop me.
Yeah.
Take my keys off me. Knock me out if you have to.
Yeah.
But give each other that permission beforehand, because your night will turn out so much differently if you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you with women as well, and safety of women. Like, I remember growing up and, like, I'd stay at a nightclub on my own, or, you know, and it's the same sort of thing. Girls, like, have each other's back. Like, don't let your friends stay in a nightclub on their own. Don't let, if you're going home, everyone goes home. know, like, go home together, get in a cab,
keep
driving. But the similar sort of thing, like, have each other's backs.
100%. I think it's,
yeah,
and look,
men and women.
In regards to, you know, a call to action, you know, for everybody who's struggling out there to find the reason to keep going on, to find what it's all for, I always say, if not for myself, then for someone else. You know, I've said this a few times tonight, but if you're struggling to find a purpose, if you're struggling to find a reason, understand there is so much that you can do for the person next to you, the person opposite you, like, the people around you. You have so much to offer.
Yeah.
Right. If you're struggling to find the motivation to do things for yourself, right?
Yep.
What you can do for other people goes beyond comprehension. It goes beyond words. You can never know. When you help other people, you are planting seeds that will grow into trees, that will provide shade you will never sit under, but someone else will.
And I'd like to also put out there as a call to action about the writing, because you fundamentally, you just sat down and started writing one day, and I do encourage people to write all of the time. So what could you say about that as a call to action?
Oh, man, that's such a good one.
Yeah.
So, look, writing, you know, is like a mirror into your mind. It is like staring into a mirror. When you write down what's going on inside, you know, and if you don't know where to start, just go chronologically. That's exactly what I didn't know where to start. So I just started writing from when I was, like, as young as I could remember. You know what I mean? And then things kind of fall into place. You kind of start remembering. Right. But yeah, the I cannot tell you how cathartic writing was for me. It was, that was the thing. Like, I knew I needed help, but didn't know I needed help and didn't know what help I needed. When I started writing things down, I was creating a list of, like, issues that, like, okay, well, that's something I've got to deal with. Oh, that's something I've got to deal with. I didn't even realize that I've been holding on to that for so long.
Yeah.
You know, and I was writing things down as I was remembering them and crying as I wrote them.
Yeah. I think there's another great project also, going back to what you were saying earlier around legacy. It's called the Legacy Project, and on their website they've got a list of questions as prompters as well. So if you are having trouble, what do I write about? There's a great free resource there that you can download. It's just got really simple questions, but they do start you off chronologically, I think, from my recollection of the questions. Yeah, so just start writing.
But yeah, and so, you know, find what you're passionate about as well. I was a lost soul. And now that I have my music, I actually feel like I have something. I have my little zen place, my little safe place. You know, when I'm behind the guitar, when I'm writing, when I'm performing, things just make sense. Like, things just feel right. And so whatever it is, if you don't know, you have to get out there and start doing things you don't like until you find what it is that you absolutely love.
Yeah.
And if you incorporate that into your everyday life, life is just so much more wholesome.
That's true. And that's what about adaptability and flexibility is all about. It's like sort of like putting yourself in maybe an uncomfortable situation for a minute so that you can actually start to explore new territory. And I guess that's so talking about the importance of self-reflection and processing those challenges and those successes in the way that you have been. And that's that next thing. It's like uncovering the future situation. So it's like for you finding that new Zen place, environment that you can escape to that doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, that's it.
And you're free to express who you really are in those moments. So I think they're the benefits of writing all of this down. It's like a way of actually accessing that intelligence that's within every person.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, guys, anyone who's listening, whether it's music or just sharing your story or just speaking up, it's so important that you do. You know, if you're not a creative person, I know every single person has a story to tell. Everyone has lived, right?
Yeah.
And there is so much that you can offer to other people. And that is such an important thing to realize.
Yeah.
If you've been thinking to yourself, I've been thinking about writing a book, or, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, writing some music or getting the music that I've written out there. Like, do it. Start now.
Start now.
Start now.
Piece of paper, pen,
now. Get it now.
And while you're doing that, grabbing that pen and paper, we're going to play a couple more songs of Zach's, just leading us up to the hour. So I've got one here. This is called I Am, I believe.
Everything I Am.
I keep saying it wrong. Sorry. Everything I Am by Zach Jones. So tell us a little bit about this song before I press play.
Everything I Am is a promise to myself that despite the fact I have no idea what I'm doing as I navigate my way through this life, which I'm sure everyone can relate to, I'm going to give it everything I have, and I'm going to give everything I am to everything that I do.
Love it.
It's a rock ballad. Let's get it.
Enjoy.
Feel real.
Welcome back to Stories of Change with Kim Harris and Zach Jones. We've been talking about resilience today and the importance of being adaptable and flexible when things do not go to plan. And I don't think I've ever heard a story that more encapsulates that sort of dilemma that people can find themselves in. I don't think you would have ever been expecting to find yourself there when you were a young fella.
Not ever.
No. So thank you so much for sharing your story today. And I think, as you've uncovered all of these lessons and you've challenged yourself to apply yourself to this change process, I think you've armed yourself with lots of great wisdom. So it's a real pleasure to have met you, and thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, heaps, Kim. No, it's been incredible. Yeah. I've really enjoyed this.
Excellent. So a worldwide exclusive here.
You're going to hear it here first.
We are hearing it here first. You want to...
Look, I'm having so much fun. I said to Kim, look, I'm really happy to share one of my unreleased songs from my upcoming album, House of the Black Sheep, on this show. And so I have a song that I'm so excited to share with the world. Excellent. And it's my song. I can share it wherever I want. And so this song is called In Love with a Psycho.
In Love with a Psycho.
It's like a pop punky kind of song, excellent, right? But it's quite like an upbeat song. Mm. You know, obviously talking about this crazy girl that I used to date, but it is. It's a lighter note to end the show on, I think.
Excellent. Sounds wonderful. All right. So this is In Love with a Psycho by Zach Jones. You're hearing it here, first time ever on Australian radio. So when you're ready.
Yep. All ready.
Let's go. What a great song, Zach. I very much enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to listening to these when I go home so I can actually listen to the lyrics as well. And I think my kids will love that song.
Awesome. Well, it's not out yet. You got the little exclusive.
I've got the exclusive, so the other ones I'll be able to listen to.
Yeah, 100%. But they're coming.
When's the album coming?
So I'm looking to the album is ready, but I really want to do a launch. Yeah. I think I owe it to the music just to have some kind of
party
event for it. So I'm in the process of like working all that out now. And so that'll be coming very soon. Look, I'm hoping to drop it within a month.
Well, keep us informed. Make sure you're on the Yarra Valley FM Facebook page as well, and feel free to engage us in conversation there, because I'll
certainly
be putting this show up on there as well.
Fantastic.
So, wow. So, as we come to... I can't believe we've been talking for 2 hours. I think I could talk to Zach for the next 3 hours. So, we have... let's recap a little bit about what we've talked about. I think we've been talking about resilience. We've been talking about adaptability and flexibility. We've been talking about the benefits of lots of things. So, the benefits the benefits of telling your story, the benefits of documenting your life story, the benefits of sometimes even pushing yourself completely out of your comfort zone, ending up somewhere where you never would have expected to go and having to turn it all around, benefits of realizing how important it is that we show up for each other and that we live that life of purpose that you've been talking about. So stepping beyond that comfort zone and having that vulnerability to share your story and put it out there, and your mum as well, I just think it's fantastic. And then embracing all of that with open arms. So you're not even shying away from it now. It's like, bring it on, and your songs, and even that one, Everything I Am, is all about that. Like, I'm putting it all on the table. I'm not going to be silenced anymore.
It's a fun way to live, honestly. Mm. It is. It's very nice. I encourage it.
Excellent. So hopefully the listeners are feeling as inspired as I am to make sure that I keep my writing pen going and keep enjoying my music in the way that I am not... I love to sing, actually, but I play a little bit of guitar, but that's about as far as I go. And I used to be a karaoke host, but that doesn't really count. But no, it's been a fantastic episode today, and I'm encouraging, I guess, that all of the audience to invite you to keep carrying the torch of adaptability within you and find out who you really are and what you're really made of, and embrace that, build your resilience if you're having a tough time. Both Zach and I are here for you, so reach out to us on socials. You can find both of us there. Experience every experience fully and embrace the challenge of that, because there are, from this story that we've heard today, you can see that every change has within it an opportunity for growth and empowerment, and that's a wonderful message to let people in on. So until our next show, which is next Monday, you can listen to the current series All About Resilience every Monday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Next week I'll be interviewing another lady, Christy Roberts, in honour of Grief Awareness Day next Monday. So before we part ways, I just wanted to really extend my heartfelt gratitude also to each and every one of you that's listened in today and heard Zach's story. His journey towards resilience is a testament to the strength that we can all find within us when we have a desire to lead a life that's truly extraordinary.
So, I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
So thanks for being on the show. And
Kim, thanks heaps for having me. And yeah, thanks to everyone who was listening.
No worries. Have we got another song of yours to end it out with, or we just...
No, I'd probably just go through and play one of them again. Yeah.
Okay, which one do we want?
Start again. Absolutely. Start again.
All right. And I'll see everybody next week. So in the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye for now.
Bye.